Please welcome Michael Kaplan.
So I have to confess that this topic absolutely stumped me. And I just kept coming up with blanks every time I turned my mind to it. On Sunday, I was going down to the Live Oak Festival for Father's Day. I thought, great, I'm in the car for over an hour. I will work something out. Again, absolutely nothing. I'm at the festival. I'm talking to a friend about Slolio, and he asked me if I'm going to be here tonight. And I says, I would like to. I've got nothing. And he said, well, what's the theme? And I told him. And he suggested a very elegant solution that I'm going to try. On September 17th, 2014, I told a story about trying to jog. And tonight, history will be repeated. When I was 8 years old, my father told me a story. And it was that as an infant, the pediatrician diagnosed me with hypotonia of the legs. I had underdeveloped thigh muscles. And he said to my father that it was very unlikely I would do much running or much in the way of sports. And my father told me that he replied, well, we'll just see about that. So that meant I had to just see about that. It was sort of like this was my father's stirring halftime speech to me in the locker room, and I was supposed to go charging out and for the rest of my childhood show the world that I had the goods. But I didn't have the goods. I was a plodding, painfully slow runner. In seventh grade, our gym coach wanted to have competitive sprints, and so he organized us all, you know, according to ability, and I was right in there with the overweight and the undernourished. And Dean had been born with hip dysplasia. The bone had not gone in properly to the socket, and so whenever he walked, it was almost in kind of a herky-jerky fashion. And there we were, the two of us, bringing up the rear, neck and neck, fighting for the honor of being not slowest in the seventh grade. And everybody was cheering for Dean. I mean, I would have, too, if I hadn't been running for my life, you know? I mean, he was the underdog. But I gave it all I had and pulled ahead just at the very end. And you know, you cannot imagine a less uplifting victory. But in eighth grade, that gym coach told us that he wanted to have a call and response cheer that we would all do sort of military style as we ran laps around the track. And if anybody could come up with a cheer that the coaches liked and wanted to use, they would be excused from running for 3 months. And I stuffed the ballot box. I was up until 1 a.m. writing enough cheers, you know, that would last my class all the way through med school. And they did choose one. And that first day when I sat in the bleachers and watched all of those suckers running around the track, I thought, I am clever enough that I will never have to run again. So you might well wonder why, at the age of 53, I was lacing up a brand new pair of running shoes and heading on down to the bike path. It wasn't because my doctor had told me I needed to increase my cardio or work on my stamina. I was searching for a marital activity. You know, for years, my wife and I had one activity, and that was raise the kids. And now the kids were young adults, and they were basically saying, you know, we don't need to raise us. We just need a little, you know, food, money, clothing, and shelter. So we were looking for something that we could do together, just the two of us. My wife suggested gardening in the backyard, and I went, meh. And I reminded her of my lifelong passion for musical theater, and she tried not to run screaming into the hills. And then I thought about running. And I, you know, because my wife has been a lifetime runner, and she can pick it up and put it down, and she can go 3 months without running and then get out there and jog for 30 minutes, no problem. And I thought, well, you know, if I could train myself to run for 30 uninterrupted minutes, then that might be a gateway into some marital fun. But that was easier said than accomplished. I had a few challenges to grapple with. For instance, I have a right calf muscle that is like the nervous, hysterical character in disaster movies. You know, the one that always dies first because the moment they hear a little rumble, they go, oh, we're gonna die! You know, and my right calf muscle would just clench into a ball that was incredibly painful, and I would be limping and hobbling along. So I was gonna have to figure out a way to sort of coax and cajole my body into, you know, being cool with this idea. And so I hit upon the strategy where I went out to the path on the first day and I ran for 6 minutes. That was it, and I did that every day for a week. And then the next week, I went to 7 minutes. And the week after that, I went to 8 minutes, and it was definitely working on a physical level. The problem was mental. When I told people that I was gonna start running, they said, oh, you're just gonna love it because the mind becomes so zen and you don't think about anything. It's just one step after another. But you know, I found myself having these internal monologues that would go like, this is good, you got a nice pace, nice stride, breathing is good, in and out, can we stop? The feet are fine, the knees are strong, the calves are pretty loose, can we stop? Calves are gonna be there every step of the, can we stop? Every step of the way, just gotta go for 40 more, can we stop? No, just 12 more minutes, can we stop? You know, so I had to figure out a way to mute that. And so I tried using an iPod and listening to music, but that just set all the whining to a beat. And then I thought, okay, well, maybe if I sing, you know? And so I turned to the treasure trove of show tunes, but you know, the thing about those is that when a character breaks into song in the middle of a Broadway show, it's because they are overcome with emotion, usually of a jubilant nature, and it just has to come out. But you know, for me, it was sounding like, look, be a lady tonight, like I was being chased out of town by a mob. But then one day, I'm jogging, and I suddenly go, once upon a time, you dress so fine, threw the bums a dime in your prime, didn't you? And I thought, hey, now, I'm hearing anger, I'm hearing pain, I'm hearing bitterness, and that's exactly what I'm bringing to the party. Bob Dylan can help me through this. Bob Dylan can be my personal trainer. And so I started memorizing all of the longest, most dense Bob Dylan songs I could find. Like a Rolling Stone, Idiot Wind, Visions of Johanna, Stuck Inside of Mobile with the Memphis Blues Again. And I figured if I could just sing them to myself and really concentrate on being letter perfect with the lyrics, then it would take my mind off the utter misery of running. And this actually worked very, very well. And along the way, there were little perks where the lyrics would suddenly illuminate the moment in front of me. I mean, I was sort of like the mobile one-man Bob Dylan study seminar. And I would be singing Joker Man to myself, and I would come to shedding off one more layer of skin, keeping one step ahead from the persecutor within. And I go, Bob, you get me. That's exactly what I'm going through. I mean, I'm just trying to shrug off old expectations and personas and trying not to beat myself up all the time. But a little later in the song, I would come to lying in a field far from the turbulent, far from the turbulent place, sleeping neath the stars with a small dog licking your face. And I go, oh, come on, Bob, what does the dog have to do with anything? That's bullshit. You're just throwing things against the wall. So we were keeping each other honest, me and Bob. And around 23 minutes, my wife asked if she could run with me. And I got really excited, and I thought, great, this will be like our test case. And she was very sweet about it. She let me go first and set the pace. And she actually hadn't been running in a while. So I was putting a little distance between her and myself, and I'm just chugging along and singing Tangled Up in Blue. And suddenly I'm tangled up in shoes. And I trip and kind of lose my balance and attempt to steady myself, which just makes for a really awkward fall. And I go down, and from behind me, I can hear, oh my God, are you okay? And, you know, like a seven-year-old going, yeah, I meant to do that. You know, I might bounce right back up. And I go, I'm fine. And I take one step, and my right calf goes, we're all going to die. Balls up into a painful little knot, and now I am shuffling and hobbling along, bleeding from my palms and my knees, muttering, hey, Mr. Tambourine Man. Really just the picture of marital fun. And it will come as no surprise that my wife did not try and run with me again after that. It was really hard to ignore the metaphorical elephant in the room, which was that the only time she joined me, I fell. But I think more was the case that what was meant to be a shared activity had been turned into this self-contained, overwrought little Bob Dylan train-a-thon, and there was just no room for anyone else but Bob. And so I continued on my way. At 26 minutes, I was singing the entire first side of Blood on the Tracks. But you know, that honestly got very depressing, and I had to invite a guest artist in and sing American Pie for a while. And then one day, I ran for 30 minutes straight. And the next day, I did it again. And 2 days later, I did it again. And then there was just that existential crossroads of, now what? You know, I had learned two things. Bob Dylan phones it in about 30% of the time. And I hate running 100% of the time. So I just started walking everywhere instead, which I found that I loved, and it's the way that I like to see the world. But a friend of mine who runs in marathons told me, you know, you should keep going because at 50 minutes, it really gets fantastic. And I thought, yeah, well, what would that be like? That would be someone who's going to run for another 20 weeks, someone who's going to walk around with Bob Dylan in his head 50 minutes at a go, someone who's going to have to pretend that he likes running. It ain't me, babe. No, no, no.